Are there any questions or anything to share? Can you hear? Try to be loud. Is there a translation? Is there a translation? You don't need it. Okay, cool. So I'd like to talk about getting into the flow or getting into the way. You could also, the same talk could be called getting out of the way. So what needs to get out of the way so that we can be in a way that works harmoniously with what is. A couple of weeks ago was marked 7 years that I had been living in the same place in northeastern Spain, Catalonia. And it's in the middle of nowhere. Right, Anandji? And I had a dream, like a wish dream, for what for me was one of the most juicy possible things, to have in the garden raised beds, which means not just flat on the ground, but a little lift. So the garden bed has some little walls around it so that the soil is on top of the earth, kind of. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And finally, after 7 years of being there, the situation was ripe to do three raised beds. And my two kids got excited about this. They were enthusiastic about having their garden in the garden. And so my son has one, and my daughter has one, and then there's the other one. Guess who ended up doing most of the work? And just letting them know after school what I put into the garden for them. But as we were starting it, as we were putting the rocks and putting the compost and putting the dirt, a kind of conversation started about when it would be done. And the excitement about being almost done. So the garden is almost complete. Because we put the compost and the dirt with the rocks to hold it up. And it's like, well, yeah, it's kind of done, and it kind of will never be done. And so I just heard myself say to my two kids, the garden is always in process. And what I said to them really struck me. It's always in process, or it's an ongoing process. And so one of the things to work with as human beings is that part that gets excited about completing something. Isn't it almost done? You know, like the typical thing in the car trip or the train trip or whatever. Are we there yet? That we think of children as being the ones to ask. The children in the back seat asking, are we there yet? Getting excited that the garden is almost done. There's no plants in it. The watering system is not in it, but it's almost done. So part of what we're learning is, as human beings, how to be with and in this now that's always an ongoing process. How to live with that harmoniously. And that can sound like a really kind of simple, small thing. And in a way, it is a simple, small thing that makes all the difference. And so then we keep putting off that simple, small thing. Is it possible to be ourselves and at ease? And even staying true to a feeling of completeness without pretending that we're done. Or without kind of getting into that wanting to be done. How's that? It's okay? Is there any question or comment so far? So it's partly to get to know the part that in us that gets busy wanting to be done, that focuses on getting done. And loses track of something else, which we could call today simplicity. Simplicity in which we can access, we can feel a kind of completeness already. Enoughness already. But again, this sounds so simple and easy. And it's not going to come every time on demand. So getting to know the part of us right now that, for example, wants to like really be sure, what is meditation? And am I doing it or not? Or what is liberation and am I it or not? So I would go to a little bit of an extreme to say that all of our suffering can be solved in this way. And all of our suffering comes from wanting to be done and focusing on that and losing track of something else. And And so what that means is all of our suffering can help us rewind back to what is important, what is a way to live harmoniously in this world as it is. Which, if we try to think about that, sounds impossible. Because we know what happens in this world. Which is everything. It doesn't look like everything's going to stop happening. We'll come into again and again, I hope, during this talk and in your practice, this investigation of what is it to be with our ongoing flow of experience that's constantly processing. To be with that in a way that works harmoniously, that works well. But I want to add a perspective. So we're talking about now, being with now, and how now it keeps processing. The garden is kind of done, and kind of never will be done. There's always something more to do in the garden, and there's a time to do it, and a time not to do it. There's also the aspect of our past. So there's our now, and there's our past. So we're talking about the possibility of having a past, which we do. And that the past could start to work as a force towards lifting, uplifting, rather than weighing down. Or we could say our way of living with that past that is as it was, that's how it was. In a way that in the long term is expansive, expanding, rather than entangling, tightening, contracting. And partly what I'm saying is that for most of us now, what works, how the past works on the present is towards heavy and tangle and tight and small. But, and it doesn't have to be that way. And so if we can feel for in ourselves somewhere deep a kind of commitment to honor whatever has happened by finding a way to let it be a force towards lifting up and opening. Because many times the tangle happens, the bondage, the getting tied up, because things went wrong, or things went right back then. Both. They went right and they went wrong, and we get tied up by the way we relate to what happened. Because we want to be loyal to that. We want to honor that. And so if we can, from today on, recognize that to honor that, what went well and what went bad, is to untie. To let it be a force towards freeing, freedom. These are teachings called the Tao Te Ching, which is one of those phrases hard to translate, and also I don't know the original language personally. The Tao Te Ching. Some people translate it as the way of things. The way. The Tao, also that word, is very similar to the word dharma in Sanskrit. Very similar. And dharma has a lot of different specific meanings, meanings that are specifically different. Like one, two, three, four, not like a little of this and a little of that, but still, taken together, it's very similar to the Tao. So sometimes dharma is that without which nothing exists, with a livingness. So not just the sense of a kind of a space that allows very neutrally for things to play around. It's much more intimate and even erotic than that. It's livingness inside that allows things to be. Sometimes dharma can mean what I'm supposed to do, what would be appropriate to do and not to do. And so that's what we're talking about. Let's stick with those two. We're talking about both. What is that really most inner livingness that would be a very good and juicy and creative kind of leading force, but that we can never quite nail down? And we can never escape, no matter how much we think we've gone off track by being so angry or being so anxious or whatever. There actually isn't escape from this, what's inside every experience. So from yesterday, that the red inside everything, however green it looks. And so, by the way, one little trick, little big trick, is however far you think you've gone from your innermost. So let's say there's frustration, or maybe the control freak has come, possibly, or even like the team of experts at control freaking are here. What would be control freak in Hebrew? Control freak. Take control. Because it's backwards. I call it backwards, you call it forward. We can rewind from frustration or control or giving up, despair or feeling left out, from anywhere. We can rewind. Means come closer home, come closer in, come closer in. With the help of that fire of frustration or the freezing cold of loneliness or left outness, with the help of that, find your way further in. And one word that can describe what's behind, even anger, is care. And behind controlling, it's twisted, but underneath, behind, inside out. More inside, more inside, more inside, is care. And so, kind of, we could say part of our job is to unburden our care. It's not a kind of care that you do or you show. It's not a kind of care that's very personal. It's actually like way, way deeper than the person. It even scares the person. Because it's like a bedrock of the person. And living from that care, which has within it a kind of openness, tenderness, not being so sure of how things are supposed to go, but also it's not being careful. In fact, all that would be so careful gets broken along the way. Kabir has an image that I mentioned in the park talk the other evening of the water pitcher on the head. What could be more important than water? And not so long ago, we had to go and get the water and carry it home. And so there was a lot of going, filling, carrying. But in this song of Kabir, he says, I'm delighted that my water pot has shattered, has broken. No more hauling water for me. What had seemed most urgent, most important, that I was most busy with, I've lost any possibility of doing that. Of going empty, coming back full, going empty, coming back full. What could be empty or full is broken, and so then the head is free to behave harmoniously. So isn't it wonderful to know that it could happen, that there could be thinking that works harmoniously? It's not that we have to kill that part off. But something does get broken. Something that at first freaks us out to lose. Because we thought it was our job. The job is, let's say, at least two layers. One layer is what we were taught to do, to be safe, to protect ourselves. And so finding out through your own experience, it's obvious when you're ready to feel it. So maybe, for example, what's your greatest fear? What do you find your mind most often talking about that you've already heard it talk about? What's your biggest problem? You think that if only this problem could be solved then. And just a slightly different angle, not a problem, but a wound. A place that's partly broken and trying to get itself back together, and it thinks, if I get myself back together, then I'll be like everybody else, or I'll be better than everybody else, or whatever. I'll be safe from everybody else. So the survival strategy. It's where we're not okay that we're not done. And then when we come out of the survival strategy and we're okay to just be here, how does that feel in the body? What does the mind say? So I'll give a couple of examples of survival strategies so then you find your way. One would be like, make sure everybody likes me, which we know already is impossible. And so that's why we keep running ourselves into the ground, tired. Or make sure nobody notices me, nobody can see me. Or, of course, make sure everybody knows I'm here, or hates me, or etc. Make sure I'm the best, that I always win, or that I always lose. But there's some extreme involved. It's like always or never, or everybody or nobody would be in there somewhere. That gives you the flavor of the survival rather than living. And although the survival strategy would be like to try to help us stay alive and be well, it's what keeps dragging us down and tearing us apart. And so if we rewind to care, we care that we could live well. We do, and we're allowed to, and that can be very raw to just even feel that. We're allowed to care about ourselves, about life. We're allowed to wish to be well, to be strong, to go against the survival strategy also. If the survival strategy was don't be seen, then when we start to find that life needs for us to be seen, it can be very, very terrible. When that pitcher, that pot, water pot shatters, to be seen or to even think they could see me. Or if it's to be noticed, the possibility that someone could not notice you. So we could say, in summary of survival strategy, some kind of deep layer of fear of being alive. Some people experience that more as a kind of ongoing hum of anxiety all the time. And it's curious because sometimes if I will say, oh, so that anxiety, that existential anxiety, they'll say, no, I'm not anxious. And then the next sentence, they themselves will say the word anxiety. So just give yourself time to get in there. It takes a lot of trust with yourself to meet yourself in that way. Otherwise, no, that's not it. And then fear of vulnerability, just to kind of complete the sentence, which is different from experience of vulnerability. Which is kind of cool and lucky. The experience of vulnerability is way better. Way better. Than what we think it's going to be when we're busy being afraid of it and thinking that we can protect ourselves from it and so on, which we can't. So The experience of vulnerability is already way better because it's true. There is vulnerability, always. We never know what's going to happen. And it can't even be said that it's definitely going to be bad news sooner or later. No way to know. It might just be ordinary. Oh my God. Are there any questions or anything to share so far?
That's such a happy note, but I think it needs to be related to the opposite of being.
The opposite of being? Mm-hmm.
Aren't we all the time onto our own death?
Aren't we all the time what about death?
Onto our own death.
Onto our own death.
There.
Yeah.
So does that also enforce our being? I mean, this is Martin Heidegger, but I think that there's...
What do you mean enforce our being?
The fear
okay.
of its arriving.
Yes.
It makes us...
Yeah.
Being much stronger.
Yes.
Good. So what she's saying, what about death? And isn't the fact that we know death is coming soon consistently making us reinforcing our sense of needing to survive, should we say? The fear. So that brings me to the second layer. So I talked about the kind of more, let's say, psychological layer or the layer of the psyche, what we've learned to do. And then there's also how even our biology is, we could even use the word trained, towards looking out. For danger and opportunity, for enemy and friend. Our biology and our really, really deep mind, but even before, way before thinking, before everything, there's an on-guardness. Yes. And so what we're saying is it is possible as human beings to actually get even beyond that. And still be alive. So it partly means starting to notice how there can be a way of being receptive to sounds and letting it come in. Letting the sounds come in. And after a while, which might be a few years, might be a few minutes, we might start to notice that at some point there needs to be time where the being really turns in and is not attending in any way to sounds coming in. A total turn inward. A total, for a while, disconnection from that biological and deep mind on-ness, on-guardness. So the whole time we're gradually playing with finding ways of letting the biology calm down. That even if there is a threat, better if I'm at ease so there's a good, fresh response. It's actually safer to be relaxed. in this alive way. And leaving room for the deep meditation, where even that very deep mind filtering of good, bad, neither, friend, enemy, neutral, is quiet. In case you've been on retreats before, we're talking about vedana. Sanskrit word vedana, which we can go back to the garden again, not only the Garden of Eden, which it rhymes with. But vedana, if you've heard of the Vedas in India, some of the texts are called Vedas. It has to do with knowledge, knowing. But the root of the word veda and vedana, this filtering, this way of taking the world, and we can't help it. We already do. It's not like it's something wrong with you. There's this deep on-guardness, looking for friends, looking for enemies, and zoning out everything else. Because something in us didn't have the confidence to just be with that much vastness and energy and goodness. It felt too much, and so we go into this kind of dream state that we're in now. That there's good and there's bad and there's neither one that I don't care about. I don't react to. My machine doesn't respond to that in between. It only reacts to what I think is good and what I think is bad. What feels good, what feels bad. So the root of vedana, veda, is vid, which means sprout, to sprout. So we're coming back to the way, the dharma, that something that's not just a neutral space that allows us to be, but inside everything, in a sprouty kind of way, in a very alive kind of way. And we can get the hang of letting it sprout. So it's not that I have to do knowing. I don't have to impose my knowledge on the world or on my experience. The practice is learning to leave room to allow discovering of what is through direct knowing, which feels exactly like sprouting and doesn't feel like having already put on my glasses where I already know how it's supposed to be. And so if we add future, so we have finding the possibility of ease in now, not pretending that there's not constant processing. So within all that constant processing, the possibility of ease, what would be ease in Hebrew? Ninahut. I heard a lot of ka words first.
Kalut.
Kalut? That's much easier for me. Two syllables. Deep ease with whatever happened as a possibility. I'm not saying to impose that, to try to pretend to be okay with all that good and all that bad. So, deep ease, with all of this non-stop-ness and mutual influence-ness, vulnerability, now, and deep ease with whatever has happened, no matter what. It didn't break you in the important part. And then deep ease with the future, which certainly includes death. And so we are just casually talking about deep ease that doesn't care about dying. We are talking about that. So when we say simple and small, big, that's what we're talking about.
Is there any question or comments?
Yes. What is a decision? Give me context.
You decide something, you let go of something, and then you choose something else. And there's something in the past that turns your future, or something in your future that turns your present. Decisions, that's the word. Hard to make decisions.
What's your upcoming decision? A big one. Okay. One of those big ones. Okay. That could be, where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? What am I going to do? Am I going to be able to make enough money? Etc. Right? I don't mean I'm guessing yours. I'm just saying big. So that you don't have to say, you're welcome to say what you don't have. So let me see if I got you, because I'm not sure I did. And then also, by way of that, I can repeat more of what you said. So we come to a point where maybe something in the past determines what's going to come in the future, or maybe something that's in the future determines now. So maybe I committed to go to university or whatever, and it starts in next week or whatever. All right. Should I get married or not? So, is this what you're saying, or did I not get you?
I was referring to the decisions in general.
Right, but we have to start with something specific, or it's too... we won't really know what we're talking about.
I have to make it.
Right. But you don't, it's not, you don't feel okay to say what that is? Does anyone feel have a decision you want to tell us about? Shall I sit or lie down? Shall I have another serving of that delicious salad? Or not? Shall I stay for the week-long retreat? Or shall I go take care of my mother or go to the beach? So there's part of us that would like to have something else that will confirm that I'm making the right decision. So either there's a rule that I'm going to follow, or maybe my inner rule is never follow the rule, whatever. So just yesterday with the retreat happening, there's so many decisions that need to be made. Someone needs to come late. That's against the rules. Which it is. And there's really good reasons for that. Because actually the retreat starts when we start the retreat. There's something that starts happening that's really, really important. And life always has ways of challenging the rules. It doesn't mean we should always go against the rule. But something in us would be much more comfortable if we could just know, we just have to follow the rule. I don't have to get involved here. And then if I do have to get involved here, that's when we're making a decision. Which parts get to say what we do?
So what I'm saying is that normally if you just go along in survival strategy and kind of outgoing alert habits, conditioning, reaction programming, then what happened before will determine what happens now and in the future. And that usually doesn't work out very well. It doesn't usually work in harmony when the past decides for now and for later. But we also can let what has happened before bear fruit now. So there are past experiences that we can and did and will learn from. Last time I went and had a second bowl of salad, I felt kind of sick for about an hour. But then in the long run, I actually felt more energy. So I'll try it again. Maybe I'll have a half bowl. Usually the process would be like, okay, I'll have two bowls of salad, seconds and thirds, and then next time, oh no, never doing that again. I'm not going to have any salad. That salad almost killed me. We go into and we go away from the water pot, empty and full, extremes. And then, okay, that was good entertainment, sort of. And now, what are some other options? And then, what does the belly say? Or what does the childlike voice say? What does the playful voice, or when I'm just really, really tired of all that entertainment, or being busy with the pressure to make the right decision, something else happens. So if you habitually have a problem to make a decision, it's true that decisions are happening all the time. If we want to think of it that way, everything is a decision. And so if it freaks you out when you notice that you're trying to make a decision, then probably it's good to notice what's your habit. Is your habit to say yes and then no? Is your habit to say no and then yes? Is your habit to say yes and then always, no matter what, stick to that? Or etc. No and then all. What's your habit? And if that's a habit, try going against it. Do something else. But meanwhile, notice that so many other decisions are going on that you're not making. You're not stopping and deciding to take another step or not. It doesn't mean necessarily that wisdom is doing that for you. So your question is exactly what the talk is about. What could lead us, what could be the leading force in our lives in a way that works out harmoniously, that's in the way? What needs to get out of the way so that we can be in that flow, be in that way that's harmonious? And one of the main qualities is that that it's light. The way that what I learned from the past comes into now would be light. Eventually, we get through all the, and then a sense of humor can come, or the way that memory from the past comes is just very light touch. It's not like, oh my God, I've got to remember never to do that again, or whatever. It just comes. Something that we would have never factored in can just lightly come. Oh, just remember. if there's been habitually a tendency not to commit, so then try sticking to it. And the other way. There is a force in us that can be and needs to be active. Usually we burn off all that energy in being active fruitlessly in ways that doesn't work out well. But we're too busy to notice it didn't work out well. And so how good to have a little space to notice that didn't work so well. That's an insight. Like, wow, great. We feel humbled by it. We feel ashamed of it. But actually, to celebrate, to notice that didn't work out well. And so instead of being in pursuit, running after, from a place of not enough, from a place of problem, from a place of fear. So usually we pursue, inspired by fear, we pursue. We go after. So if it's the right decision, or if it's like a good state in meditation, whatever we're after, we get behind and we start running. Just that state is a state of suffering. From a place of fear, being in pursuit of whatever is a state of suffering. It's not wrong or right. It just doesn't work. And it hurts. And we get exhausted. And the mind gets overexcited and keeps burning off all the energy that could go somewhere else. And so I love coming across lines from Gautam Buddha. Where he surprises us. Because he's known for talking about suffering. Because that's what woke him up. But he does what he says to be in pursuit of. He says, be in pursuit of something. Go after something, yes. Go after that pleasure. He uses the word pleasure, which is probably sukh, which means happiness, pleasure. But the same word could be used for what we like, that we prefer, that we're addicted to, whatever. Same word, different meaning. Pursue that specific pleasure that's not addiction. Pursue that pleasure that's not pleasant because it gives you relief from your fear. It just is good. It feels good. Pursue that pleasure. It is not to be feared. So what he's saying in that is, you'll be afraid of it. That pleasure, that happiness, will be scary. Don't be afraid. Or be afraid and anyway go after it. But know that it's a different kind of going after, completely different. We can use the same word, pursuit. And we can feel experientially the difference between when I'm going from a place of fear after whatever it is, I'm suffering. And he has other words that he uses to help us track it down. There's an English word that I was trying to figure out how to describe, vexation. Anybody?
Vexation is what you put if you don't want to get sick.
Oh, no. 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 Vexation. It's like maybe it's being harassed.
It's bombastic.
It's boon. Yes, something that annoys. So we're suffering, we're annoyed, we're in despair. What's despair in Hebrew?
Ye'ush.
See, everyone knows that one? Okay. And a fever. Fever. Being sick and you get really hot, you might be shaking, you might be hallucinating. You don't feel like eating. It could kill you. So, and again, it's not that we are wrong, oh, bad girl, bad boy. These are just clues to notice. If you feel really hot, annoyed, despair, suffering, if we could just have that chance to notice, oh, this really sucks. With tenderness. Not to make it wrong. There's nothing wrong. That's our system is telling us, stop. There are symptoms of a need to change our way of living towards something that works. It's good information. It's feedback. It's not wrong. It just hurts. Nothing to be ashamed of. Pursuit of that pleasure. That kind of, we could say, as if comes out of nowhere. It has no reason to be that yummy. That simple, ordinary, kind of like secret. How come nobody else is so blown away by the jacaranda flowers? Well, maybe they are. It's so inner. And then to give, he gives a little more information, so about this pleasure or happiness, calling it the bliss of peace. And what I hear there is a practice, going from the flash moments of feeling just a goodness that would be easy to dismiss or to miss or to feel embarrassed that we feel it. And just stay within yourself and within that. Get to know that. Then we start to grow our capacity to feel that, and the momentum of that in our lives also grows. Our capacity grows, and the amount of flow grows. The sprouting grows. And then we have less and less to worry about whether we're making a right decision or a wrong decision. We find out afterwards what we decided to do more often. And we say, that's good. Good enough or good. So just to be clear, because the subject of decision making usually comes when there's some obstacle there. And so some pressure. So know yourself. What you've been holding back from, escaping, what is your tendency? And give the chance for something else to happen. Not to be determined by the past. But also don't assume that you have to do the opposite. Maybe something else. Just pause a little longer. Maybe something else sprouts another way.
Is there any question or comment?
I want to ask about thoughts. They are here all the time, and especially the I thought, like, is it to me, or I need to do, or me, the I, and we are, I identify with the thoughts. I identify with the thoughts all the time, like, I have a stream of thoughts, and I, you know, when I'm not noticing, I'm just feeling it's me thinking. But if I'm looking more carefully, it's just the thoughts arise without that I'm bringing them.
Yeah.
If there is any, like we shouldn't push away the thoughts, but what, how we should, like, treat, like, when I'm here, and, like, yesterday I was laying down, and I feel all the thoughts coming.
Yeah.
And you don't want to push them, because they're coming from the other side, but also not to embrace them, because it's the same as I'm lying down in my room, you know? So...
Yeah. Could you hear? Yeah? Could you hear? Okay. Good. So partly, you already gave your own answer, like noticing what's happening. Thoughts are coming, and there's a thinking that I have something to do with these thoughts, thinking that it's something to do with me, and then noticing it isn't really, and then feeling what's the catch, like what is the burn, what's the fever, I feel afraid, and so then I think they are wrong, or I'm wrong, or I've got to do, or they got to do, or then I kind of catch the thoughts. We feel like the thoughts catch us, but we can start to notice what's catching the thoughts and from which fear is that happening. So that part of it is continued noticing, but also if we can erase that shouldn't push away and come again into what works well. It can work well sometimes to push away the thoughts. With a little more firmness and go just belly or just feet for a while. It's obviously not forever. Also, the assumption that there's always thoughts also not true. So we take away that, and then actually there's some not thoughts, but I'm so into the thoughts that I seem to be not there, so I don't notice the not thoughts. So a practice of starting to notice the spaces. Notice where the thoughts come from and holding on to them. And that the nakedness without them. How is it to be just, okay, the thoughts are here or not here, doesn't matter. Doesn't affect, it's not about me. It's the momentum from the past happening, but I'm not giving any more fuel to that movement. I can just notice what the movement feels like. So there's noticing that it's not true that there's always thoughts, though it's an important insight to notice how much there is of thinking here. And so keep noticing, where does it come from? What does it feel like when it's happening? What does it feel like when I hold on to them? What does it feel like when there's less attraction to be involved with thinking? What about when there's thinking that isn't a force of bondage, some more freeing kind of thought? How is that? And then definitely some firmness in practicing our other resources and our other capacities. So thought is going on or not going on. If it's going on strong, it might need a little more strong just belly or just heat. And also more interest in what works well for you. I said belly and feet. There's everything could be helpful. What is not pushing away and what is not getting all involved in, but simply like, that's going on, that's not important. What is important? And what connects you down to that? So I used the word care earlier. What's behind everything? Some kind of deep care, deep stability. Kabir also, after in that the line after, he talks about the water pot breaking.
The water thought breaking is when, there can be thinking or not thinking. It's not about me. It's not interesting. The interest is gone in that. Then the next line of his song is, he sees the grinding stones again. It's from not so long ago. Two stones that are turning against each other to grind grains into flour. And in the poem or the song, he sees the grinding stones grinding, and he cries, seeing the grinding stones grind. We could say it's past and future. We could say it's right and wrong. Any kind of, where there's conflict, there's two. There's they. There's right and wrong, good and bad. There's defense. That fear, existential fear, anxiety. And we think that's all. Or we think, let me protect myself first and then I'll find out what's deeper. Or we're afraid that this fear feels so deep. It must be the deepest thing. And I've got to just cover that up. And then he says, we can notice in our experience, because there's so much change all the time, the processing going on, there is a way that that constant change actually locates us, it could locate us, right in the middle, called the pivot, which is not getting crushed. The center of the wheel. So the fact of the constant processing, if we get into the sprouting energy, we're getting towards the center. We're getting towards using that fact of constant processing towards unburdening. The quality of stillness without any problem with all that movement, and even creatively working with all that movement.
And going there by just identify, it's just like pointing out, like when I'm starting to get the ability to point out, this is thoughts, this is not me thinking, this is what's making this.
The non-identifying. Identify means I take myself to be that.
So I need to recognize.
Like, yes. And so the hard part is we want to go from being that's me to being something else. Okay, if I'm not that, I'm going to be that. So it's not that we get to just change from one role to another role, one kind of perspective to another kind of view. It's where there's something deep in us that will be so happy, can hardly wait to be unbound by view. So there's views, but they're not important. There's opinions, they're not important. There's preferences, they're not what decides for me. I don't decide from anywhere that can be pointed out. So we can feel the fever and the distress when I think these are my thoughts and they're wrong thoughts. Can we also feel the distress, the fever, the annoyance, the suffering, when these are my thoughts and I think they're correct thoughts? I take it to be a sign about me. It's terrible. It's awful. It's sick. Not that it's wrong. We feel sick, actually, if we notice our experience. Even if it's like, oh, I got the right thoughts. No, you didn't. They came out of nowhere. And from your past habit. And instead of just trying to replace this thought with that thought, which can be a helpful temporary measure, at some point we notice something in us wants much more freedom. So I had the book in my hand the whole time. We'll save it for tomorrow. And let's see if there's a time. So I'll just bring in the very last bit of this teaching of Lao Tzu from China. That our concern is with the depth, not the surface. So the red, not the green. Only because we've already done so much green. Our concern is, our interest, we can uncover, we can discover that already we love or are attracted or interested in, and we can pursue the pleasure of depth, not surface. We can pursue, we can go after the pleasure, the happiness of are already being tuned in towards the fruit and not the flower. So this is relevant to the decision-making thing. We get all uptight about the decision we think we're making. We just tune into the whole picture and feel what gives the plant what it needs for that fruit to come. Which means watering the root. We don't water the fruit. We don't water the flower. We don't water the leaves. We water the root. Our concern is with finding a place, a way, where it's not, so here they say, having no will of our own. This is his advice about how to make a decision. Have no will of your own. Dwell in reality. So find that we can be at ease in our very lives, in our experience, in each our own way, in, on this planet, at this time. In touch with what is. So actually living, dwelling, actually being here, actually living. Letting all illusions go. Is there any question?
Sometimes I feel if my mind is quiet or still, that sometimes can go past and I feel like no eye, like I don't know where I was.
Yeah. Good. Sometimes she's feeling a quietness. And then she kind of, I don't know where I was. Yeah. The kind of sharpness of always knowing where I am is only very rarely helpful. Or in very small dose is helpful. And this is experientially how we start to leave room for the other parts and spaces of ourselves to have a chance to get us into the way. So getting that sharp me out of the way to allow that to be the way. May all beings live in peace, discovering a way to live harmoniously on the planet. May our practice and our lives be devoted to liberation for all, including ourselves.